Welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of April 8th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Sunday night, a warm and lovely spring Sunday night, is Jim Allen. How's it going, man? How you doing?
It's going well. You know what? Of course, you know what warm and pleasant means this time of year? Extra pollen for our hay fever, you know, our cedar pollen allergies. So thanks a lot, weatherman.
Thanks a lot, dude. You know, Mr. Trees.
Yeah, it's like, I know, it's
guys.
I know, all the warm weather and the beautiful blue skies. I hate you all.
Yeah, I really feel like I want a new nose. I think I have wiped my nose several billion times since March 1st.
Wow. We didn't know you can't. We didn't know you were counting, but wow! Thanks for that attention.
I lost count after 1 billion.
Wow!
All right, and with that, on this week's show, we've got a terrific interview with Brandon Mann of the Lotte Marines. We're going to discuss opening week and the second weekend of games, and then handle some great high heat questions. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, well, about a week ago, I got out to Zozo Marine Stadium and had some very interesting chats. And I saw a pitcher coming in, and I couldn't tell from a distance who it was. I couldn't see a number, so I asked my colleague. He says, that's Bolsinger. And so I said, Mike, good to see you. He says, I'm not Mike, I'm Brandon. It's good to see you. It's been a long time.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
It's been a long time with Bolsinger, too, because the last time I saw him, well, that's a long story, and I'll leave it. But it was sort of like I was waiting for him to come out from his weight training. And the next thing I heard, he had some sort of shoulder discomfort from his weight training, and he went to the hospital. So that was the last time I talked to Mike. So
you know what that anyway. You know why that happens, Jim? Because you have your head buried too much in the data, and you don't watch enough games like I do, so that you would know Mike Bolsinger and Brandon Mann when you saw them. I suggest you watch more baseball.
Okay, hold on. Let me write that down. Okay, I got
a piece
it.
Of paper
I got
that it. You're gonna yep. that you're gonna lose.
No. Memo to myself. Watch more baseball. Okay. So anyway, I talked to Brandon Mann, and I was really happy to see him because we had a chat about, I'm going to say it was 7 years ago, early in the 2012. No, it was when 2011 season, when he couldn't get a chance with the DeNA Bay Stars. At that time they were still the Yokohama Bay Stars, and it was really surprising because this is a guy who he didn't throw real hard, but he's a lefty, and he did in the minor leagues, in the Eastern leagues, which is a hitter's league. He didn't walk guys and he didn't give up home runs. So basically, you know, he does what you want, which is, you know, avoid the most dangerous hits and not put extra guys on base.
Right.
But he didn't get a shot. And they told him he didn't throw hard enough, and they told him he didn't do this, and they told him he didn't do that. And that was basically, he came up the next year, and he pitched okay when DeNA did give him a chance. But it was, they didn't call him back, and then he had a heck of a time coming back to Japan, which he's going to tell you about. And I'm going to pretty much let him tell his story. So take it away, Brandon.
Okay, our guest this week, after a long absence, not missing in action, but getting his game together, is Brandon Mann of the Chiba Lotte Marines. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, absolutely. It's a pleasure.
So tell me, now, what was the process to get to there? Because obviously you said you went to indie ball and you went to, you did all these different things. And what was the mental process, the physical process, what changed in you that got you where you are today?
Honestly, you know, after I played in Japan the first time, my thought process originally was I need to get back to the MPB. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why I played in the BC League. I played the BC League for an entire season, and I got crushed there. I honestly
must have been disappointing.
It was shocking, and it made me work harder because I finished the year there really, really well. I actually got a workout with SoftBank, mm-hmm. And it didn't happen. I thought something was going to happen there. It didn't happen. But, you know, I went back to the States. I got signed by the Pirates. I had a great year. I had a 2.9 ERA midseason, and then they released me. Mm-hmm. They told me that I was too old.
Yep.
And I didn't throw hard enough. And so I went, finished the year in indie ball, did well. Nobody signed me. So I went home, and that's when I started going to Driveline. Okay. I started training there. I went to indie ball. I did an entire year of indie ball. I broke the strikeout record in indie ball that year, and Oakland finally gave me a shot. But, you know, I spent 2 years in double A with Oakland, and, you know, then they told me that, you know, I think we're going to pass on you. And so then I worked out for a ton of teams again, and finally Texas gave me that opportunity, and, you know, I made the most of it. They told me in spring training that there was a good chance I wasn't even going to make a team.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I made the AAA team, I think because maybe guys got hurt or something. And then I was kind of like their last resort in the bullpen. And we kind of got blown out the first two games of the season. And I went back-to-back the first 2 days out of the bullpen, and I threw really well. And the manager liked that I was willing to come in and get blown out, and I shut the door both times. And he was like, you know what, I'm going to give this guy an opportunity. And he started putting me in real situations, and I lived up to it, and I was organizational pitcher for April for the Texas Rangers.
Right.
Yeah, and I didn't give up a run until I think May 12th last year.
There was a lot to be said for sticking with it. We're having a dream and sticking with it.
Well, yeah, I just always knew that I could make it to the big leagues, and I always knew that I could make it back to Japan as well. And I've been told no a lot, and sometimes that just drives me more. I don't know. I just
are you just always stubborn as a child, or
I don't know. I just always believe that, you know, I had a place in baseball. Wow. And for me, as I kept getting older, I kept getting stronger and throwing harder, and I kept staying healthy. And for me, it was just like, you know what, I'm not done. You know, when my time is up on the field, you know, I'll know. And
no, nothing was telling you.
Nothing was telling me. I every year I would finish very, very strong. I've always been a late finisher.
Okay.
You know, the end of the seasons are always when I'm at my very, very best.
Despite the fact that everybody was telling you you were basically weren't good enough.
Exactly. And I think that fueled me a lot is being told that, you know, I think you're good enough, but we got younger guys. Or you know, he's a fringe guy. But I got to the big leagues and I got it.
You got a ticket back to Japan? Right?
I did, absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, I mean, not many people could.
No.
You know, so. I don't know, I'm just very grateful.
Not after.
Very, very grateful and blessed. And
what, 6 years?
2012 was my last year in the MPB,
yeah, so. After 6 years.
After
absence.
6 years, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and it took me 5 years to get to the big leagues after that. That's the even craziest part. Yeah. Is.
There's another guy named Brandon Knight. He used to pitch for SoftBank. He had a career like that, too. He was here, and then he was here for a long time, and he went back to the States, and he went to Korea, and then he was in the majors and pitched in the Olympics when he was, like, 38 or 39 years old.
Oh, my gosh. You know what, though? Like, I think baseball needs guys like us because it's good for, you know, there's going to be guys that make it to the big leagues fast, and there's always going to be those guys. There's going to be young guys here that make it to the Ichigun fast. But then there's also those other guys that are late bloomers. Like, I was definitely a late bloomer, 100%. You know, they say most people's primes are when they're 28 to 31, 32. That's not the case for everybody. Some guys just mature a little bit differently.
I think mature is the key word. I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, your mind and your body have to be in the right place at the right time.
For sure. But another thing is, like, at 34 years old last year was the hardest I'd ever thrown in my life.
Wow.
You know, like, when I was 26 playing here, they told me my average fastball when I was here was, like, 139, 140. And my average fastball last year was 92.4. And so that's, what, like, 147. Yeah. Granted, I was a reliever last year. So that plays into it, but still, like, 92.4 would be harder than I ever hit in my life before. So, I don't know. I think it's good for young guys and guys who maybe, you know, they're told no early on to keep fighting.
Well, that's the power of people telling their stories.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, some people might be like, well, you only made it to the big leagues for 25 days or whatever it is. But those 25 days, show a lot more heart than some people who just are, it's almost like handed to them, you know?
Yep.
And so, but it's a story for the average person almost, because I don't know, I had to work really hard for it.
I was going to say, how did you survive all those years on minor league money? Because that's, even an indie ball, it's not any.
Oh man, indie ball is nothing. It's $1,000, $2,000, maybe a month, and then finding rent and family. You know, it wasn't easy. I'll be honest, I was blessed to have parents that are financially stable.
Yeah.
They helped me out a lot with that.
Yeah, that's the, I think MLB lives off of people's parents, essentially. It's not the players, it's MLB that's living off the...
It's amazing that they don't take care of their minor league players. I mean...
Yeah, it's amazing. It's probably not the word I would use. It's criminal, pretty much.
It really is. Goodness, like, I've seen so many crazy things in the minor leagues, especially because, like, my last couple of years in the minor leagues, after I played in the MPB... The teams actually started paying me decently. Okay. But it wasn't until 2016, I think, is when I started making real money in the minor leagues. But man, you just see some of these guys. You see 5-6 guys living in a... I just saw something the other day. If you actually go on Instagram... Do you have Instagram?
I don't. But...
If you do, if you ever just go on it, look up minor league grinders, and they show what it's like in the minor leagues. And it's players who make videos and just show how crappy it is. There's one where it's about like 8 or 9 guys rented a small warehouse, and they have air mattresses, and that's how they afford to live.
Yeah.
It's like 8 or 9 guys living in a small little warehouse, and there's no rooms. They just put up like little tents in there and stuff.
Yeah, I saw one guy the other day. Put it on Twitter. He's going to live in a school bus in a parking lot.
But, like, it's funny, and people are like, oh.
It's not funny.
No, it's in the sense, like, for like, another player. Like, we laugh about it, but we also know, like, it's truthfully criminal to expect. I mean, the minor leaguers work way harder than the big leaguers. The big leaguers get paid millions and millions of dollars. The minor leaguers get paid... nothing. And
hundreds of dollars,
yeah. And I mean, their days, dude, when I was in the minor leagues, man, you know, 20-hour bus rides, and then you get like 3 hours of sleep after that, and you go to a field and you're there for 8 or 9 hours, and you're getting paid what, based on that, like $4 an hour, $3 an hour?
I doubt that much.
It's even less than that. Yeah.
No,
and
you
so
may, you'd make more money you'd probably make more money shiny shoes on the street collecting money from people in cars.
I just don't know how MLB just doesn't take care of their players better.
Wow. Thanks. Thanks a lot. It was great catching up.
Oh, absolutely. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you.
I appreciate it as well.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for the wonderful interview. And it was just superb catching up with you. And I enjoyed it. So, John, comments?
Truth be told, you know, I did the interview with Neftali Soto last week, and you did the Brandon Mann interview on the same day, and we debated which one. Well, we really didn't debate.
No, we didn't debate. John debated.
I debated amongst myself and my many personalities, and we decided to go with the Soto interview simply because I talked to him about opening weekend and opening day stuff, and it seemed more timely. And if we had done that this week, it would have sounded weird. So, but this was terrific stuff, I have to say. I mean, one thing I want to clean up, and hopefully Brandon is listening, is people, because I heard this when the A's and the Mariners were here playing in Tokyo, and people kept saying the Tokyo Dome and the this and that, the Kyocera Dome and all these other places. And there's no the in NPB. It's, you don't say the MLB, so don't say the MPB. It's NPB. And so anyway, you know, now that I've done my custodial duties,
your grammar police,
grammar policing, which I wish I could do on Twitter, but I stopped myself anyway. All these people drive me bonkers with the bad English. But anyway, now as for subject matter in the interview, this was terrific, and I'm gonna save my favorite part of the interview for the end, because frankly, he tossed off enough topics in here that we could talk the whole podcast, I think, about what he was, just the path he has taken here, the way that major league baseball teams label players and then toss them aside if they don't think they... I mean, there's a lot of food here, a lot of stuff we can unpack, but I'm going to stick with my two favorite points. And the first was, he talks about late bloomers and the fact that he's throwing the hardest of his life at the age of 34. And that struck a chord with me. And I can't tell you how much that means to, I think, guys who are out there who are older, let's say older prospects, mm-hmm. I'm going to label them, because mm-hmm. some guys don't get a chance anymore after Tyrone Woods told me this a long time ago. He said, once you get a label on you and somebody writes it down on their scout sheet and other people mm-hmm. start reading it, whether it's true or not, or whether it changes or not, that's the perception of the player. And you cannot beat that, because that's the first thing evaluators and front office types and coaches, all of them start looking, well, he does this, or he doesn't throw hard enough, or he can't hit major league pitching, or he doesn't hit for power, or whatever the label is. They don't see anything else. They stop looking at what you can do and focus on what you can't do, and whether the things that you can do outweigh the things that you can't do. They never look for that. They just focus on those things. And so you hear a guy say now he's throwing harder than he ever has. And mm-hmm. I mean, I can tell you, I remember, that's why I think I jumped on you a couple of years ago when it was a Kyoto story, and I didn't know if you had written it or not, but you said, you know, Yuki Yanagita will be past his prime. And I said, you don't know that. You know, Kyoto News doesn't know when he's going to be past his prime. And yes, the numbers say probably he will be past his prime, and the likelihood is that he will, but we don't know. It's just like when I say I knew they were going to win, and you say, no, you didn't. And I thought, you know what? You're right. I didn't. I had a strong belief. I had a strong notion that they would win, or this team would win, but I did not know that. And so that's the same with these players, that we can't know when they're going to be at their best and when they're going to peak.
Well,
we can follow the numbers, and we can follow what past history has told us about other guys, but
exactly.
But we
exactly.
don't know for every player that this is going to be their peak.
No, that's true. I mean, it's true for, you know, it's true for 99 guys out of 100. He might be the 100th of the exception,
right?
But pretty much, there's a real easy reason for that, and I'll say it really quickly, and it's the same reason that I mentioned why I didn't expect Ichiro Suzuki to improve significantly in 2020 or 2019 or 2020, was because, you know, people who make big improvements have reservoirs of something they have not tapped. And I couldn't think of anything Ichiro Suzuki hadn't tapped completely, except his experience. I mean, he couldn't work out better or harder than he'd done. He couldn't be more flexible than he'd been. He couldn't have a better diet than he'd had.
Right.
He couldn't try harder or be more concentrated. So when you start going down, you know, so if you're maxed out, okay, if you're maxed out, it's really hard to take a step forward when you're past the age of 29 and 30. Now, another thing, of course, the steroids era blew that away or confused people a lot, mm-hmm. because people had these big surges after they were 30, which is abnormal. But the other thing is, it takes so much talent. It takes so much physical talent to play in the major leagues, or to play baseball or athletics or any sport at a world-class level, at an elite level, that the player who's playing at an elite level who has large reserves of untapped potential is fairly rare. And I think that's okay. Why I would say 99 times out of 100, there's a very, very poor chance that any player is going to be better at the age of 32 than he is at 27.
I got you.
My guess with Brandon Mann is that he had a lot of untapped potential.
Well, there was something there, obviously, or, you know, but I tell you, it's just what he said. Some guys mature physically much later, or just at a different rate. I mean, remember me? I mean, I ran my first marathon at 40, and I told you the stories about it.
But you weren't a world class athlete either.
Well, I'm just saying, I was never really out of shape. I always played basketball. I was always active, and I was always running. But I didn't start training for a long distance until, you know, around 40. It was after 40 that I ran the first one. I ran under 4 hours at the age of 41. So you're right. You need to do something different. You need to train differently. You need to max out at something.
Exactly. And but if you're, and what I'm saying is, if you're not training differently, if you I would say if you're better at 40, it was because you weren't doing enough things the right way before.
Well, because I mean, no I got it. Yeah, I could agree with that.
It's like. Anyway, so there are people who develop more slowly, for a variety of reasons. But anyway, yeah, and obviously in this case he has a technical, and this is something we're seeing with a lot of people now because of the feedback
mm-hmm.
and the technical expertise of places like Driveline Baseball, where they can actually fine tune your mechanics. They can pick out things that you're doing that are holding you back
mm-hmm.
that he could, you know, he could throw faster at the age of 34 than he could when he was 27. So that's something that he did not have available to him at that time. I think had he had it, he probably would have been throwing probably 95 or 96 then.
It's possible, but again, I mean, maybe he just physically wasn't ready to do those things. I mean, people can tell you this is how you do it, but you can't. You've got to work on it, and it takes time. And maybe True. He just got better understanding his body after the age of 30.
Also, the fact that, like he said, he had very little pro experience before he was 27.
Yeah. I mean I'm a late bloomer myself, so I really appreciate that whole aspect. And so, yeah, I was all over that.
Well, I was in the best shape of my life when I was about 52. So obviously that's how people grow. They're always better at 52 than they are when they're 27.
All right. So I'm going to try out. Let's go try out. All right. So the other portion I really liked was the one that you wanted to throw out. And trust me, listeners, when Jim said, just throw out all that talk about salary stuff at the end, that was meaningless. I'm like, dude, I don't want to say that was the juiciest part, but it was pretty tasty. And I didn't want to throw it out. I thought it was really timely because we had the Toronto Blue Jays raise pay for their farmhands throughout the organization. And that just happened.
Yeah, 30% to 50%. Yeah.
Yeah, and that just happened. And we talk about, I mean, it's really hard. I think you look at the kinds of players who have been coming over to MPB, and I think we still have to fight that stigma of, well, usually it's guys who are at the end of their careers. I think we still get that person who's been in the States, and they don't know the kind of players we have over here in Japan. And I would say the past 20 years, we've been seeing younger and younger players or guys who just haven't been, they haven't had major league success, but they've been fairly young. They've still been in their 20s and they've been able to come over here and at least give it a shot. I think the last player who was a big name major league player who came over here to play and didn't do well and was gone in a shot was Kevin Youkilis with the Rakuten Eagles. But that's the kind of player a lot of people have in mind, that guy who's maybe at the end of his career just wanted to extend it a little bit. But that's not what we see over here. And you know, we don't see the Alex Ramirez types who come over here maybe in their 20s and start to shine a little bit and then have a 10-year plus career here in Japan. But I think that's the kind of maybe demographic of the kind of player we're going to see more often trying to make it over here. And you know, Brandon, while he's over 30, he thinks he's in his prime. Now, how long that peak lasts, we don't know. But when you talk about the salaries and everything, I think that's a big deal in terms of what you want or what the players want. Because when Brandon talks about the fact that he finally made it to the major leagues and he's out there on the mound and what's on his mind is coming back and playing in Japan, I thought that was profound.
Yeah, well, that was interesting. And I'll agree that was not what I expected. You know, but the whole bit about, the other one was interesting. I mean, he had a really hard lesson. I mean, the bit, you know, as soon as he lost the job in Yokohama, you know, he went to the BC League and he got wiped out. And it's like, I'm trying to get back to NPB and I can't even make it in the BC League. You know?
Yeah. What's going on here? Where are they?
I know.
They're keeping a bunch of really talented players down here.
Yeah. So that was, that was a case of, I guess, self-belief, because obviously it was not an easy road back, but obviously he obviously believed he was going to make it back. So he got over that. And of course, if SoftBank did give him a tryout, despite the horrible start.
Can I interject? Because I think SoftBank is probably, I don't know. He didn't say what year it was. Do you remember what year it was? Because
it would have been 2013.
Okay. Because right now, SoftBank has about 7 imports and they could all produce. I think they could be starters on other teams and they have to send 3 of them down to the farm because it's just the sheer numbers. There's not enough room. And that could be a good problem to have. But I imagine 2013, they didn't have as many. But right now they have 7 guys. I mean, it's pretty laughable.
Right. But, again, the labels. I think the thing that struck me so much, now I didn't know this. There's a few things I didn't know. I don't want to take away your comments, but I knew.
Feel free to expound, yeah.
Okay, well, I think the one that got me was, I asked him, like, were you stubborn as a child that you you couldn't take no for an answer? You couldn't. He kept saying over and over and over again.
Right.
Like every time somebody tells me no, I just want it more.
Right. That's the challenge has been thrown up. Let's go.
Yeah, I know. I'm going like this guy. I had this image of him as like a perpetual 2-year-old. No, are we there yet? Are we there yet? No, are we there yet? is this the majors yet? No, is this the majors yet? So sorry, Brandon, but I just love the you've got to love the attitude. And I think what he said was spot on, that this is a good story for people to know that perseverance does pay off. And of course, he said it well. He might not be where he is if it weren't for the fact that his parents could help him when he needed help.
That's big.
It's a sad state of the major leagues, but this is the way the major leagues operate. If somebody else is going to pay, they're not.
Or someone else is not going to pay, you're not, because it's hard to, you can't make a living. You either have to find another job or work 2 jobs and try to play baseball and travel or something. I don't know what you can do. Maybe now when there's so many internet businesses, you could do something on that bus. That minor league bus taking a long trip somewhere, you can get some stuff done on the
internet. When you're not sleeping. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. And, I think I mentioned it years ago on JBW. There was a foreign player here in Japan who was doing very well. I won't say his name now because I don't think that was for public consumption as to who it was. But he said he got an offer from a team back in the States, and it wasn't that, I think the money was comparable and everything, but he said nah, I'm good. He turned down the major leagues to stay here in Japan. And so I think we're going to get players
that's not that uncommon, I think.
Well,
that's not that uncommon.
Yeah, if you have some success. I mean, if you're
right
mediocre, or if you have only 1 season of success and then you want to cash in, I think it's difficult. But when you have had a number of years of success and you have a team that comes knocking and you turn them down, I think that's kind of different. But either way, I think we're going to see a lot of players, because I've been talking about it for years. I remember the last time, not this year, but the last time the A's and Mariners played at Tokyo Dome, and I asked Coco Crisp about the kind of players who might want to come to Japan, and he said, "Well, it's not something he at the time he was playing with the Oakland A's, and he said it's not something I would consider, but I see where you're going, and I think that's true, that a lot of guys might just toss their major league dreams aside to come and play here, and so I think we're going to see better quality players, and we already are seeing them. I think it's just making the adjustment is the problem, and they do have to make the adjustment. Sometimes it's not a one season thing. It might be something like Brandon's going through,
well,
where it's a struggle, but we're going to see better and younger guys come over here and look to stay.
Well, Kenneth Vargas is an interesting case. I spoke to him right after I talked to Brandon, and he said, look, I've been trying to come to Japan for 3 years. Every year the Twins said, nope, we're not going to let you go. We're not going to let you go. And I don't know what happened, but when they said they sent him to AAA last year, he said, like, that's it. I'm done here. And he's like, I don't need any more of this. And I don't know how he got his release, but I'm sure it was a case of the Marines wanting to pay enough money that the Twins were willing to listen.
Right. All right. Well, let's talk about the other Marines and talk about how they're doing now. Zach Ikuma on our PL predictions show said he was worried about the pitching. And for me, I wasn't, because I saw improvement down the line and I could see Ayumu Ishikawa doing well, although he was taken off the roster because of back issues this past week. But I think he'll be expected to miss about one start and he'll be back. But they went toe-to-toe with the SoftBank Hawks in this weekend series, playing against facing Kodai Senga and guys like that. And they won 2 out of 3. So I was very impressed with that. And I think the pitching is an issue. It definitely is an issue. But when we see that they are leading the way in Japan with 18 home runs through, what are we at, 9 games now?
8. They're second now. It went 19 to 18. They surrendered 7 home runs today to the Hawks. So the Hawks are now leading. So they lost their home run derby to the Hawks on Sunday.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
The Marines went into Sunday's game leading the Hawks 18 to 12. And they finished the weekend trailing 19 to 18. In home runs on the season.
Okay. Well, there's still a lot more home runs. I mean, they solved their problem with the issues with the home runs. And so I labeled this segment Power to the People, because because there's guys like Shohei Kato, whom we didn't know basically was a home run hitter, but he's rendered guys like Seiya Inoue, like, you know, that guy is on the way out. If he doesn't have a home run, Inoue doesn't. And Kato already has 4, including a 2-home-run game. So that's a problem.
that's kind of like he's having the Daichi Suzuki. Do you remember, I think, 3 years ago?
I think it was, 2016, yeah.
Yeah, 3 years ago, and Daichi Suzuki was, like, nobody hit home runs.
Right, for a week.
Like, for the first week of the Pacific League, and then, like, I think Daichi Suzuki hit the first 3 home runs in the league.
Yeah, it was, so. I think, you know, I don't expect Kato to do anything like that, but...
He's already done it.
He's already, no, I mean, to continue, I think Suzuki had a really good year hitting home runs, and the rest of the season, I don't see that happening, but...
No.
But it could, but I don't see it happening.
I don't see that.
So, I mean, we said that they addressed their power issues. Brandon Laird had hit in 4 games to start the season and was looking to tie the MPB record with 5. And obviously, you talked about Vargas. Vargas has hit a home run at least, one. But it's Shogo Nakamura who has really taken a huge leap, and he's hitting for power early. And you know, that home run lagoon and all that stuff, I think if he stays healthy, that's going to be a guy to look for on that team who can maybe take up that power slack from Inoue. And I don't think we might not see that much of Inoue that much at this season. I'm not sure how he stays in the lineup if he doesn't. He's not going to do anything except, I mean, he's okay at first base. He's got good feet. He's got soft hands and all that stuff at first base, but he doesn't have a lot of range. And if he's
not young,
he's not young.
He's going to be 30.
He's going to be
July.
30. Yeah.
So, yeah. Now I did an interview with Tadahito Iguchi a few weeks ago. And that's part of that is on Kyoto News and you'll see it. And one of the things he talked about was not overcoaching. And what he meant by that was there's sort of talk right now among baseball reformers in Japan about the idea that if we tell the kids what to do all the time, they're not going to develop problem solving skills, how to deal with situations on their own. And Iguchi, in his interview, basically said, he said, what's, you know, I asked him, what's the difference between here and Japan and America? He said, Japanese players stand there and wait for the coaches to tell them what to do. In America, the coach is a consultant that you go, who's available for your help. That
right.
You go to when you're ready for it. When you have the problem you want to solve, the coach will help you solve it. In Japan, you don't solve problems. The coach gives you the answers. And he said, we got a lot of young players this year, and I want the coaches to sort of hold back a little bit and erase their individuality. Let them develop their special, you know, special unique things they can do. Let them find out what works. And one of the things they can do is hit home runs.
Well, yeah, maybe. But that's when I talked to him a long time ago for the big interview for the baseball special. Remember that?
Wow. I do.
I think he said something in that neighborhood, but he phrased it completely differently in saying that in the States, the preparation is not organized. You know, mm-hmm. you don't have a big meeting with everybody sitting around going over the same data, saying we're going to do this, we're going to do that. But you can do that as an individual. You know, that those numbers are available. You can go out and do all that study, but we don't do it as a group. And so I think that's basically in the same vein that the coach is there as a consultant and says, well, you know, this happens, that happens. And I've seen this. And remember when we had Alonzo Powell out on the show and I said, you know, you're Ichiro Suzuki's batting coach. How do you work with him? And he said, well, I don't. I wait for him to come to me, or I tell him what I might be seeing if he's having some problems. Mm-hmm. But consultant, that's a really good way to describe what these guys are doing. But yeah, here in Japan, they're more like drill sergeants, right?
Headmasters, teachers.
And
teachers as in you weren't, you know, didn't raise your hand before you fielded that ball, so sit down.
And you're going to get a paddling, you know.
Exactly.
Catholic school.
Exactly.
So yeah,
Coach,
it's
Mary
fun.
Joseph.
Hashtag I hate.
No, don't make me go to Coach Mary Joseph's office. But, you know, and for all the success and all the home runs that obviously the Marines are hitting, still they're only 3-6. And so I think that obviously points, I mean, they're scoring runs, although they didn't today, but they are scoring runs. They seem to have that power. Remember, I always complain they need 3 hits to get a run, and that's not the case anymore. So I expect maybe the hitting to come down, but the pitching to come up. And I still think they're gonna make a run here at some point. And we're just starting, so it's certainly no time to panic. But it does concern me to see that they're scoring all these runs and they can't win games. That bothers me.
Well, there's a couple of interesting things. Their pitching and defense is through Saturday was. So Saturday, before they got hammered on Sunday, they were surrendering the highest on-base percentage in NPB.
Yeah.
The highest slugging average in NPB, so that didn't go down.
No.
Having said that, they are doing some nice things. They are leading NPB in walks.
Okay.
And, or through Saturday. And they have, interestingly enough, I have to mention, they have yet to have a sacrifice bunt this year.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I know. Give them credit for that.
I do. And actually, I actually tend to think that other than maybe Oryx, I haven't seen too much. I haven't seen a plethora of bunts. I've been seeing some situations where teams could bunt and they haven't, and I've been enjoying that. But I mean, other times they just haven't been able to get the bunt down.
Okay, that's possible too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that Lotte has been that, but I've seen teams that just haven't been able to get the bunt down, and then they just decide to go ahead and swing away.
Hey, so well, the Dragons are good at bunting this year.
Well, I've seen a lot of Dragons not be able to get the bunt down, and so they've
well, they're good. They've succeeded more than anybody else. So,
well, I don't know if that's success, but okay.
Okay, indeed.
They succeeded at failure.
Ooh.
So let's talk about some of the
other. You can tell there's some love there for that kind of venom.
Hey, man, we'll talk about that later. But some early highlights. I actually complained about the Wednesday game that I saw that ended a 12-inning game that ended scoreless. And I was complaining on Twitter that this is like soccer. And someone said, where's the feigned injuries or something like that? And I thought, yeah, that's true. There's nobody diving. Except for at first base, trying to make that play close when they ground and hit an infield ground ball or something. But I complained. But then, you know, as soon as the game ended, there was so much action, especially maybe from the eighth inning on, let's say, that there was so much action between it was the Buffaloes and the Hawks that ended a scoreless tie. And when you consider Oryx starter Yoshinobu Yamamoto was making, I think it was just his second top 10 start in the regular season. And SoftBank lefty who started was a developmental guy. This was a great, great game.
Oh, Kotaro Otake, yeah.
It was a great, great game. And, you know, the hot hitting Hawks that came in there, I think Yamamoto held him without a run. I actually held him without a hit for the first 7 1/3 innings. And then he gave up a hit. And there was a runner on second. And he thought he was going to come home and score because it was, you know, a hit to center field. And Hayato Nishiura, he's a second year outfielder, a 19-year-old. He throws him out at the plate, and it was Shuhei Fukuda who got thrown out at the plate. And he's pretty fast. He's one of the guys I think for the Hawks.
You got to be careful with Shuhei Fukuda because Oryx has Shuhei Fukuda too.
Yeah, I looked at that and I'm like, wait a second, that's an Oryx guy. But yeah,
make sure we know which one.
Wait a second. But I like Fukuda, this Fukuda, the Hawks Fukuda, because I always thought of him as if he went to another team, he'd probably be a starter. And the fact that the Hawks have so much talent and they've
he
got
a starter. He plays left field for the Hiroshima Carp and his name's Takayoshi Doma. That's him, baby.
No, don't do that. But anyway, it was just a great game, and there was I think the worst play of the game I think was the boneheaded play. I forgot what inning it was, but Kodai Sano got doubled off on a pop up to center, and I think it was runners in second and third and one out, and he gets doubled off, and it just shows you that the Buffaloes, you know, they haven't changed yet under the new manager. It's a process, but it's gonna take some time. But I think they're going to change. I think they're going to get better. I don't know what they're doing in terms of the bunts, but I would imagine they have some. Remember, Zach talked about it in the preseason show, and he said they have so many little guys, undersized guys, that I think they're going to do a lot of bunting. So,
well, they're not really doing a lot of anything.
They're doing a lot of losing.
Well, yeah, I was looking, because we talked about the Marines hitting all those home runs, and well, who isn't hitting home runs? And the answer is Oryx.
Yeah. Yeah, and I talked with, I don't know if this is if he's a blogger or just a tweeter, but a big Buffaloes fan. And he said, well, they're not hitting home runs the way they're supposed to, or they're not meeting expectations. And my first thought was, well, whose expectations are they not meeting? Maybe they're meeting the team's expectations. So maybe you need to lower yours. But I don't think it's that way. I don't know. I think it's a team in flux. And I think the first year manager, he's new for them. Norifumi Nishimura is just going to have to mix in. I mean, the same as with the Chunichi manager, Tsuyoshi Yoda. I think they're just going to have to mix and match and figure out who they're comfortable with in certain situations. And it's going to take them a while to learn what these guys can do and how they react in certain situations. And they'll get better.
Well, they look very. Although I do like Joey Meneses.
I do too.
I also like the new guy Yuma Tongu, and I like a couple of the other. They've got a lot of rookies on that team. They've got a lot of guys who with just a very little amount of experience on the first team. They look so far like last year's Buffaloes, basically the sort of Pacific League version of the Tigers. Good pitching and okay defense, and really not a lot of offense.
Yeah, but they bungled themselves out of a few scoring opportunities, and that particularly that one in that scoreless game where they get doubled off on an obvious pop fly to center. They had no business, you know.
Well, I want to talk about actually, I ran my first sort of like weird team totals of NPB, which is how I knew that the Marines had no sacrifices. And the one that came to me, now this is an approximate number because occasionally there are batters on base that are not accounted for.
Right.
For an interference or because, for example, if the fielder on first drops the ball on a ground out, it's recorded as a ground out, not as an error. It's an error on the fielder, but because the fielder who picks the ball up and throws it gets an assist, NPB scores those as ground outs. So they're a little hard to tell when they become errors. You really have to sort comb through the data more carefully than I can. So the numbers don't quite add up, but I was looking to see, you know, we did this last year, done this for a couple of years, you know, the teams, which teams are erasing the most base runners.
Yes, I remember that.
And which teams are throwing away the most base runners. Well, ironically enough, the team which a few days ago was leading the Pacific League in scoring, the Rocktown Eagles, have had 16 runners thrown out on base this year.
Already? That's more than one a game. That's like two a game.
Well, almost. Six of those were caught stealing and two were picked off.
Yeah, I remember seeing the rookie Tatsumi picked off at first. Yeah.
Right there.
Right after his first hit.
Right there. They're two for six. They're two for eight as base stealers. So it's like is Dave Okubo hanging
back
around the team? Cause I know it's like just run. Don't
run until
stop.
They get you.
Don't. That's right. Run. You might be safe. Okay.
Hey, so there's always a next base until you get back to the dugout, son.
Okay. Indeed. And so then I was looking to see which team was throwing out the most base runners. And that was the Fighters. Now, why that is? I'm not certain why that is. Is it they have a lot of? But let's see, caught stealing. Yeah, they've had thrown out six base runners, which is that's not a huge number considering 13 tries. But yeah, so six of those 10, approximately 10. It might not be exactly 10, but it's close to that. So
yeah,
okay. The teams that aren't losing base runners are the Bay Stars. Right now, by my count, zero.
Because most of those guys are hugging whatever bag they're close to. They're pretty slow. Yeah.
And the Dragons, also zero.
Well, not that's through Saturday because they had...
That's through Saturday. And again, it might be approximate because they might have had an extra runner on base that I can't account for.
Right. Yeah. Kyoto got thrown out today. Kyoto.
Okay. So anyway, yeah. So... just fun stuff, not really of any exciting, but that those 15 Eagles on base is pretty wild.
Well, I tell you this, you mentioned that the Buffaloes aren't doing a lot of anything, and I did tease that they were losing, and they went through a whole week without winning a game, and they finally won on Friday.
Mm.
Yeah, they beat the Eagles, and then they came back and won on Saturday, and then they had another tie. So someone tweeted out tonight, they've already got three ties. And they started to extrapolate the number out for the entire season. And I just started laughing. That was so funny. So I thought that was a good one. Now let's talk about the Lions and the Fighters a little bit and that series that they had. And something that the Fighters were doing, and I tweeted about it last week when I saw Yuki Saito make a start. And he didn't last that long. They lost the game 11-2 to Rocktown. It was Thursday. And I remember worrying about that rotation when I did the PO prediction show, and that's why I picked them to finish so low and out of the playoffs. But I think they have some untapped talent they can turn to eventually in the rookie, Kohei Yoshida, the rookie, and he'll probably come up and get some starts eventually, and hopefully they don't rush him. But I don't like the fact that they're doing This is a dramatic change in approach for a Japanese team to take on a major league strategy, and one that's basically not really fully accepted stateside in this opener thing that the Tampa Bay Rays started last year.
Well, they're doing it differently too. They're not. It's more like they're bullpenning, classic bullpenning. You know, two innings, three innings. The opener was one inning, get through one inning, unless the guy throws like six pitches or something.
Yeah, I didn't even notice that they were sending guys out for a couple innings, and that the Tampa Bay Rays were just, you talk about the opener being a one inning thing, and I like the Rays and I like to watch some of their games, and I didn't even notice that was a one inning thing for them last season. But this is, to me, again, something that you don't see something like that come over to the Japanese side. I wish they would stop bunting so much. And
no, well, the other thing at Tokyo Dome that we saw was the other thing we've seen from the fighters this year is sort of major league caliber shifting.
Mm.
Against pull hitters, they've put three infielders on one side of the field.
No, I didn't see that. I didn't see the drastic. Yeah,
they've done it. So. They've done it at least once.
Okay.
And somebody hit the ball. It was a left-handed hitter, and they hit the ball right up the middle to where the shortstop was playing behind second base.
Right. Thank you.
Yep. Exactly.
Pitcher very happy.
And I only saw that because I think Jason Kosky or somebody posted that on Twitter. So I saw that and I thought, okay, things are so at least. I'll give the Nippon Ham Fighters credit for keeping their eyes open to what's going on in the world. Besides, this is Japan. That'll never work.
Yeah, this is Japan. It'll never work. But, they've got their issues and things haven't really been working for them. And, you know, they're struggling out of the gate here. But I expect them to be better in some phases. But, again, at the end of that bullpen, I think I tweeted on Thursday that, ooh, this is the night where the end of the rotation guys are going to start. There should be a lot of runs. And there were like 59 runs, I think, across, at least 59 runs, maybe more, across NPB that night. And I just kept sending out those popcorn-eating gifts, and it was just fun stuff to watch because there were runs everywhere. let's talk about the Central League very quickly and just touch on a couple things. And I thought one thing is, and I wanted to mention with my Dragons that they've had a really rough start if you think about things deeply. Mm-hmm. But if you just look at the record, they seriously had a tough week. They had they lost three games in which they had the tying run on third base, and two of those instances it was the runner on tying runner on third base, but fewer than two outs, and they couldn't get the guy home twice in the ninth inning. So, I mean, they were on the verge of, I mean, let's say they win those three games, the record looks a lot different. So things are not that bad.
No, it's been kind of a fun. I know. It's like, I think the best, this is such a wonderful, you know, first 9 days to the season. So by which I mean we had two streaks. We actually had a couple of streaks. The Hawks had a nice little winning streak. The Giants had a, they won the last two games of the Carp series.
That's true.
Then they swept their next series. They won six straight, and then they got whacked around by the Bay Stars for a couple of games. So that was fun. And then the SoftBank Hawks come in and they get whacked and all kinds of fun stuff going on. They got whacked by the Marines.
By the Marines,
you know?
Yeah.
And at home.
At home.
And this is a place. I haven't looked, but I know the Marines really have had a bad, you know, the last 10 years have had a really, really, really bad record. And, you know, they have a kind of a Yusei Kikuchi record against the Hawks. It's like, no, not that. Okay, I'll go to the dentist. Damn it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's been fun. The Eagles had a five-game winning streak. The Buffaloes bounced back and won some games. The Tigers scored some runs. The Swallows look like they're saying, I mean, you know, it's so funny because the first couple of games, they were so extreme the first weekend. And this week was so much fun. So I'm thinking, wow, what a great season this is going to be.
I'm just having fun. I mean, I was talking with NPB Reddit on Twitter, and I said, relax, relax. You've got the Dragons pig pen to dig around in. You'll have fun. And you know, he was complaining and early on, and sure enough, the bullpen came on and lost it. I think, you know, Yoda has to figure out that he can't put guys like Ryosuke Oguma in late game leverage situations, because that's just asking for home runs and losses and all kinds of ugly stuff. But I like the way Yoda used his bullpen the other day when they had an extra inning game. He went right to his closer early on, and he went down the ladder instead of up the ladder from the best pitcher to the worst pitcher. Mm-hmm. And I like that, because it gave them a chance. If they had been able to score some runs, they were going to be running out lesser pitchers, but they were going to, you know, have a chance to win with their best guys first. Mm-hmm. And it ended up, they lost with in the 12th inning with two outs on a home run. But, the guy out there, I don't think Oguma is his top team caliber performer. And hopefully they can develop some of their guys and bring them up later in the season and have better arms out there. But it's still fun. It's just fun to watch the games. I'm just having such a great time. It's a blast. You know how much I love to watch the games, so I'm enjoying them for sure. A few notes. Now, I wanted to acknowledge some of the import players who traditionally have gotten off to poor starts during their time here in Japan, but this season has been completely different. And at the top of that list is Brandon Laird of Lotte, and the home runs, obviously, but he's also hitting for average. And I remember his first season here, he just struggled and struggled and struggled early on. And then finally, I mean, he always seemed to come up with, you know, power numbers and RBI numbers, but he couldn't get the average going. And he's hitting better at the start of this season. Alex Guerrero of the Yomiuri Giants also off to a really good start. And I wouldn't say has been a slow starter in his time here, because he's been spotty in his playing time in even with the Dragons. I think that first year with the Dragons, he did get off to a slow start and then came on strong in the second half. But definitely he is off to a fantastic start for them after sitting out, I think, the first game, not getting off the bench, or maybe getting off the bench for a pinch hitting. So he did appear in that first game, but didn't really have an at bat. Jose Lopez of the DeNA Bay Stars having a really good start. And traditionally, he's another guy who doesn't like the cold. And, you know, ironically, he doesn't like the heat either, extreme heat. So, but I think the weather conditions, it's been kind of mild so far. So he's off to a good start. Zealous Wheeler.
Before we move on, just a congratulations to Jose Lopez. And
that's right.
That's right. He's won won the last three Central League Gold Gloves at first place. He's now surpassed Lee Sung Yup's Central League record for consecutive errorless chances at first base, which was 1,225. So he's well past that now. So congratulations. Yep.
Congratulations to him. And then Zealous Wheeler of Rockton, another guy, traditional slow starter. Every year he has been here, but not this year. He's banging out of the gate for them. And one of the reasons you would think their record is, I mean, I was thinking that they were right up almost undefeated, but that's not the case. But they're close enough. They're right at the top.
Right up there with the Hawks.
Yeah, with right five with wins. So that's good. And then Diane Viciedo of Chunichi, another guy who typically gets off to a slow start. He has been, I wouldn't say the power numbers are as gaudy as anybody like Brandon Laird or even Zealous Wheeler, but he's hitting. He's starting to hit. He usually doesn't hit very much in these cold months, but he's hitting well. So congratulations to those guys, and hopefully they can keep it going for their respective teams. Also, the Tigers beat the Carp on Friday 3-2, and that gave Randy Messenger Big Mess hit win number 100 combined in the major leagues and in MPB. I think he's at number 96 in Japan, so he'll have another day where he gets a placard and another game ball, hopefully, where it's got 100 for him in MPB, and that would be quite an accomplishment for a foreign pitcher.
Congratulations.
Congratulations to
him. So obviously when he told me I saw him on Wednesday, and he said he had things to work on, I guess he was working on that stuff, because he did a good job.
He did a fantastic job. I know the Carp win record-wise, they're 3-6. Yeah, they're off to a sluggish start, but look at you. You talked about it before that Takayoshi Noma, yeah, he's more than adequately with the batting average, at least, and with the home runs too, filling in for Yoshihiro Maru. Yeah, right now for this first nine, games.
If he hits a lot of, I'll pay the winner of our Japan Baseball Weekly podcast lottery 1,000 yen if Noma hits 20 home runs this year.
Oh, wow. Since nobody entered their name or predictions I guess we won't have to pay anybody.
We'll have a drawing. We'll have entries. We'll mention it when Noma gets close to 20.
Okay. All right. And then one more note. The Bay Stars won their 4,000th game in club history today. And I did see someone tweeted out the official numbers. They're 4,970 with a bunch of ties. So that's a winning percentage of 466. That's a whole lot of losing. But congratulations on the 4,000th win. Now let's make sure we don't fall 1,000 games under 500. Okay.
Hashtag
high. Phillies fan. What's going on here?
All right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, the first one comes from our buddy Glenn in Tokyo. What's up, Glenn? How you doing, man? Always enjoy your questions. He says he had a good laugh at Baseball Tonight's podcast when Buster Olney had their overreactions to opening day. It made me wonder what your reactions were to opening week in NPB. My overreactions were, SoftBank is the NPB evil empire and cannot be defeated. It does not even seem to matter who is in the lineup. The team just wins. And then he says, Yakult is doomed. It may be the worst team in Japan this season, scoring a run a game. Hanshin has found three more rookies to hit 250 with their 10 other part-time players. Good grief. That's our buddy Glenn in Tokyo. What were your overreactions?
Mine, I guess, were, identical to the one in the SoftBank. Are these guys ever going to lose? And pretty much for the same reasons, like, okay, well, I think it was when Shota Takeda said, like, you know, pitched, like, I'm not going back in the bullpen. Forget about that, buddy. When he started the other day and looked like lights out. And so I'm thinking the Hawks are going to have a hard time losing this year. And then, of course, things happened and the season caught up with him. And so that was one. And then the second one was, Damn, the Marines are hitting a lot of home runs.
Yeah.
I'm going like, but that was not an overreaction. I think that was just an observation. So I guess my overreaction was the Giants also don't look like they're ever going to lose. How are these guys ever going to lose? And the Swallows, how are they ever going to score a run? Well, of course, I know the answer to the last one because they play in Jingu. They'd score runs if they wore blindfolds.
Go ahead, swing the bat. Just listen
exactly.
For the ball.
Yeah, you hit the ball, it might go out. Okay.
All right. My overreactions were that the Marines' power struggles are fixed. Seiya Inoue is going to be looking for a job in a couple of weeks because a guy half his size in Shohei Kato has twice the ability to hit the ball out of the park. He's going to be the next big slugger in a pint-sized Inoue body. So that
didn't
was
we
my
hear
first
one
year.
last week about Sho Nakata being the big boomer all of a sudden? No,
that wasn't me.
Oh, okay. Somebody else on the podcast wasn't on the podcast first because he had like five or six RBIs the first weekend.
Okay. And then I honestly thought the Tigers would never score more than four runs in a game, but they did it today. They won. They beat the Carp 9-0 and got a shutout from Yuki Nishii, his first Central League victory. So that was good. But I didn't think they were going to be able to score nine runs because I said at the beginning that they might have these games where they pitch really well, but they struggle to score a run, and that's going to be the problem. And so I never foresaw them. I thought never more than four runs. So they did that. Other than that, Glenn, you know that I know you've been listening to JB W long enough to know I think it's meaningless to look at anything right now. It's just fun. This is a fun time. This is open up stuff. And except when we have to look at Yuki Saito doing anything. Anytime that guy's on the mound, it's time to look away.
You know, it's really frustrating. I mean, it's like he'll make some good pitches and you'll go like, wow, this could be the okay, not okay next time.
Yeah, and then he makes the next pitch. Yeah, yeah.
Although, you know, to be honest, watching his start against the Rockton Eagles the other day, I thought he actually, his problem was they were looking for the pitches when he felt, you know, when they made him throw strikes and they were looking for low fastballs in the zone. And they were going down and getting them. I mean, they just really executed well. And then, of course, they were probably thinking, well, 3 innings, 4 runs. Okay, that's enough. That's a nice opening. Let's get him out of there before he does more damage.
Yeah, let's close that. Yeah.
Exactly. Indeed. Put a lid on him. He's done.
Put a lid on it. All right, the next comes from Matthew, and he sent us an email, and he says, hypothetically, you're only able to attend one NPB game in your entire life. Knowing what you know about Japanese professional baseball, what stadium, which away team, and what time of year? Jim.
Oh, I thought we got to pick the day in history. Okay. I thought if I could go back in history and watch this one game. Okay,
this is a reflection of Jim like glancing at questions and not ever really looking at them because he's so busy.
Man, don't give away all my secrets. You're making because it look Jim, like I don't try.
Well, I just want everyone to understand that Jim is an Ally McBeal kind of busy. His busy is busier than anyone else's busy.
Hashtag high heat.
I'm sure that reference means something to somebody. Okay. If I had to go anywhere...
You want me to pick and you think about it while you're...
Yeah. Go. No. Going to... go. It would be a day game, maybe late in the. It'll be like a game I remember, which was the national holiday late afternoon game at Koshien, with the Tigers playing with a pennant on the line, and maybe against the Giants or the Swallows. Since I'm a Swallows fan, I think playing the Swallows, but at Koshien. You know, in that day atmosphere and on natural grass, it's just magic.
Yep. Yeah, that's a good one. I thought about Koshi, and I think for me, I'm going to Chiba, and I'm going to watch the Marines in late May when it's not hot, it's not cold, and I'm going to jump out there with the Marines fans in the outfield all day long. Mm. And at that time of year, like I said, the weather is still nice. It's not, you know, the team is not out of the pennant chase yet, so the games matter. and if it's this year, then I might get a home run ball. I could sit in the lagoon. But I just love those fans. They're so enthusiastic. And I think whether the whole experience, whether they win, lose, or tie, I think the whole experience would just be great. So that's what I'd go and see. Mm. And I'd go and see them, since it's late May, I'd go and see them against the Tigers during interleague because the Tigers fans travel so well. Mm. Some of them are scary. I won't lie. But it just makes for an entertaining game. So that would be where I would go. And that's what I would suggest. Anybody who's going to come to Japan, go to Marines and just enjoy, revel in those fans. And the Swallows fans are great too, especially when they score runs. But I just love the enthusiasm that the Marines fans project the entire game. It's just incredible. So I would say those guys.
It's a little different, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Anyone else who has a question, hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. Send us email questions to yakyujohn@gmail.com, or you can also drop us a note on the Facebook page. Look for us on iTunes and sign up. I know we have a lot of new listeners. Thank you very much for listening.
Mm-hmm.
And we will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark.